Okay, so welcome everyone. Welcome to Procrastinate Baking Podcast, a place to talk about our baking obsessions and avoid doing everything else. And I'm Louisa, and welcome to our spring baking extravaganza Facebook Live event.
I'm Rachel. We are streaming live to Facebook, and we're going to air an edited replay for those who weren't able to be here today. We have several amazing guests with us who will be sharing their baking specialties. But before we get started, I'd like to introduce our two prize sponsors and tell you about our games. Share your baking photos with us. You can comment them on our live stream thread or tag us on Instagram or Facebook for a chance to win a ticket to Bake Fest. For those who aren't familiar with Bake Fest yet, the Bake Fest is amazing. We had the opportunity to go the last 2 years and we learned so much. The Bake Fest brings the whole baking community together through virtual live hands-on workshops, demos, and networking opportunities. All classes are recorded and viewable for a year after the event. And the next one is going to be in May 20th through 21st. So make sure you follow the Bake Fest on social media and tag us in your spring baking photos for a chance to win. And then we have two more prizes. Two winners will receive a set of 6 edible candles from Let Them Eat Candles. Let Them Eat Candles are handcrafted from premium dark and milk chocolate. To win, hit us with your best baking and chocolate puns throughout the event. You can comment them here on the live stream or on our recent Instagram post. And then please also remember to follow Let Them Eat Candles. Keep those puns and photos coming throughout the event.
And before I introduce our first guest, just a reminder that anybody watching the live stream can pop in some questions and we'll make sure to leave time to answer them. And any guests can share the live stream. And to all of our presenters also, thank you for being here. And we wanna make this just really fun and informal. So feel free to chime in if any other presenters are mentioning something that interests you. We just wanna make it as interactive as possible. And so with that being said, we're gonna lead into our first presenter. We have Kathy, forgive me if I don't introduce your last name. Is it Choff? Kathy Choff? Chofi. Kathy Chofi. So Kathy is a self-taught home baker and content creator. She was also a competitor on the Great Chocolate Showdown. And today Kathy will be sharing a demo for us, which is super exciting. So a demo of a flat cupcake design. And welcome, Kathy.
Hi, everyone. So yes, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. This is a cool thing. I'm going to talk about flat top cupcake designs. And you've probably seen these all over Instagram. I really love them because to me, they're a really fun way to create a canvas for your cupcake that you can pretty much do anything on. So I have a couple that I've pre-done, and then we're going to walk through a couple of designs. So you can see when you look from the side, right? Like it's what it says. It's a flat top cupcake. So really fun, really interesting. So I've got a cupcake here, and I'm going to actually walk through what we do to get the flat top. And there's a couple of tips that you really need to remember when creating these designs. Number one, the microwave is your absolute best friend in this case. So you really want your frosting to be quite soft and probably a little bit softer than you're used to when you're piping something. Obviously, when you're using decorating tips, particularly French stars or things like that, you want really crisp edges. You don't want to kind of to be gloopy. Well, it's actually the opposite when you want to do your base icing for a flat top cupcake. So I usually prefer American buttercream for these. You can use Swiss meringue. However, I find Swiss meringue obviously is a meringue, so it has a lot of structure and it doesn't get as soft as American can get in the microwave, number one. And number two, it's just when you'll see when we kind of smuck it out, we want it to have really beautiful, perfect edges. And I find it's harder to get that with Swiss meringue. So I've got some American buttercream here. I put it in my microwave probably about 5 or 10 seconds after I made it, just to go in 5 second bursts. And I want it to look a little bit shiny, which tells me it's a little bit soft. And then I've got a big round tip here. You can actually you don't even need a tip. You can just cut your piping bag if you wish, but I like the roundness of the tip. It again helps keep those perfect edges. And I'm just gonna go. And you'll see, I'll show you in a second. I've just put basically like a gloop a frosting here. And then what I'm going to do, I've got a little baking tray with a piece of parchment, and I'm going to take my cupcake and I'm going to go and squish it down. And I'm kind of looking to see how even is the icing all the way around. I know that's going to be a bit hard to see, but hopefully you can see the flat edges there. And then what I do is I take this and I put the cupcake in the tray in the freezer for about 15 minutes. So I've got some already prepared. Let me just grab them and I'm going to show them to you. So this is what it looks like when I take it out of the freezer and off the parchment. You can see it's perfectly smooth. It's really nicely round. And now, like I said, I have this really amazing canvas to do different things on. The other thing you can do, and if we get time, I'll show it to you. The other thing you can do is use a cookie stencil or even a big stencil. So what I've done here is I followed the same process. I put this big loop of frosting on top of my cupcake. I laid down the stencil on top of my parchment paper sheet on my tray, and I turned my cupcake upside down and pressed it down onto the stencil. So you can see I've got this fun stencil here, and we'll see if we get time to do something with that. In the meantime, I've got my blank canvas here, and I thought I'd do a little simple design similar to this one here. I've used a sage color, and I've got some pink here, and I thought I'd just do a little bit of an easy design with rosettes. And I'm using a Wilton Tip 16 for the rosettes. And I'm just going to place them kind of randomly. This is really easy to do because Wilton 16 and little rosettes, super fun, super easy. And then I'm just going to put a little gloop in the middle. Done. And now I have a little bit of white icing, and it's tip 3. You can use tip 2 as well. And I'm just going to place some random dots. And what I like about this is it gives it a bit of a vintage feel, I find. And your frosting for this, your buttercream, is going to be, you know, regular. You don't have to microwave this one. For the extra designs, it's just however you would normally create it and the stiffness you like. Done. Easy, right? So that's one. So let's go to the stencil. So I've got my stencil here, and you can see, hopefully, I put my hand underneath it, you can kind of see what pattern it is. It's like little, I don't know, leaves. It's fun. And I've got some luster dust here in a dark green. And I've also got a makeup brush that I only use for caking. I got a makeup brush set from Amazon, and I only use it for caking. And I use a lot of this for a lot of these brushes for luster dust applications. So I'm going to get a little bit of this green. Like I said, it's a dark green, and I'm going to leave my stencil on, and I'm literally just going to put in my luster dust on top here. And I would use a generous amount, particularly if you want the color to be seen. So can you see that? Cool, right? Okay, so this is the best part. I love watching these on Instagram, honestly, as stencil reveals. It's very satisfying. So we pull that off, and now we can see the dark green design. Doesn't that look pretty? So you can do just anything. I did a version of this for Christmas where I then did a tip 2 and did tiny little holly, like in red, little holly berries all over the leaves. It was really, really pretty. It turned out nice. But in this case, I've got tip 107, which is a drop flower tip. And again, I've got my rose. And I'm just going to, like, I don't know, randomly put some drop flowers here. I don't think there has to be any real rhyme or reason to it. We're just going to add some color, some flowers, and you can kind of go half off all over. The luster dust of the green is behind it, so it's not like you're losing the color from that. So we've got now some of these little flowers. And if you want to add a center, I've got some white that I used for the dots. And I'm just going to go in and add centers. So there's lots of different designs you can do with this, as I've said. Last summer, I did a really fun one where I had my buttercream, I had sort of like an ocean blue buttercream. There we go, all finished. And I had also some sand colored buttercream, and I kind of mixed them on top, like did half in a wavy pattern of the brown and half of the blue, turned it upside down, and then put in some white thin lines of buttercream, and then used a brush and made them into waves. And then you can add little shells. You could do all kinds of fun stuff with this. You could also, what I quite often do with them is I will make little fondant decorations if you have the fondant molds, or make them out of chocolate. And you can add in little decorations to give it some a 3D feel, in addition to your piping, if you like. So really, really fun technique. I hope you try it. And thanks for having me.
Thank you, Kathy. I love how smooth they look. And the idea of using the makeup brush, I had never thought of that. That's so
Cool. you keep them only for baking, but it makes it so easy just to slap on your luster dust. You can use a little activator underneath that if you like, sweet sticks. Not that I'm not promoting them or anything, but I know they have an activator. But I find actually you don't even need it. You can just layer on your luster dust. It's super easy.
Cool. And where did you get the stencils from?
So this one is an Cakes by Angela Morrison stencil. Excuse me. There's a lot of different brands. But just look for cookie stencils. I actually was thinking it would be cool to take a cake stencil, which, as you know, is quite long, and because it has to fit around a cake. And I was thinking you could actually do random patterns. Like you could layer like 12 cupcakes on top of that, put them all in the freezer, flip it over with another pan underneath, and then you could luster dust the whole thing, and they'd all kind of like, you could do a whole set like that. I think it'd be really cool.
That's so cool. I'm getting excited just hearing you describe it.
I definitely want to try it. We do have a few questions coming in and comments. Comments that the stencil trick is neat from Deanna. David says he enjoyed the tip about putting it in the freezer. Juliet says, I want to try this with Christmas cupcakes. I've not had good luck with stencils and powdered sugar. And Christy wants to know if you can use cream cheese frosting for this.
For sure. You could. That's definitely a good one.
Well, thank you so much, Kathy. This was awesome.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And with that, Rachel, I'm stealing your transition.
You're okay. So up next, we have a wonderful woman who goes by the nickname of the Baconeer. Christina has a background in chemical engineering and is a home baker who has sent many of her baked goods to military service members through the Soldiers Angels organization. On social media, you can find her under the Baconeer, where she shares packaging tips as well as ship-friendly baking recipes. And today, Christina will talk with us about Soldiers Angels, shipping baked goods, and how to customize recipes. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you. I'm Christina McNeil, otherwise known as the Baconeer. I started volunteering to send deployed soldiers homemade baked goods to Soldiers Angels almost 6 years ago. While my real job has nothing to do with food and I haven't been formally trained to cook or bake, as soon as I was old enough to use a rolling pin, I've always sort of been good in the kitchen. For those of you that like baking things from scratch, that means whenever you see a recipe that you feel like you want to try, it gets bookmarked or saved somehow. But after a while, that stack gets really large. And unless you have someone to cook for, you don't really have the time to try them all. I happened to be on a Facebook baking group where I saw another member say she sent baked goods to deployed soldiers, and that seemed like something I was destined to do. After a bit of research, I was quickly signed up with Soldiers Angels. While they have several teams that support veterans, those on active duty, and their families, the baking team specifically sends treats to those deployed. In the beginning, I didn't really know what I was doing, but I chose a brownie and cookie recipe anyway and proceeded to send my first box. I had a vacuum sealer from before that I used to send treats to a friend who was in the Peace Corps years before. So I knew that would help keep things fresh during the transit to the other side of the world, basically. The baking team only requires its member to send one box of baked goods per month, but for me, that quickly wouldn't do. I sent my first box on July 3rd, 2017. After the first week, I was trying to determine what to do the next weekend and determined it wasn't that hard to do. I'll send out another box. By the third weekend, I was like, no, you've sent two boxes already this month, find something else to do. But by the last weekend of the month, I sent two more boxes because I felt bad that I hadn't sent one the week before. So that started the trend of me sending at least one box per week ever since. I want to stress this isn't my full-time job. I work for the College of Engineering at Northeastern during the week, but on the weekends I turn to my alter ego, the Baconeer, which is a combination of baking and engineering. The engineering part of me keeps track of everything, so I know how many cookies and brownies I've sent, how many eggs I've used, but the baking part just wants to try the next recipe. I don't have a professional kitchen. I cook everything out of my kitchen, from my home. Before I send each box, I look through all the recipes I've bookmarked and typically choose three per week, usually some sort of brownie or bar, and then two other different flavors of cookies. Most recipes, I only try that one time and then move on for new ones the next box. That doesn't necessarily mean I follow the directions exactly. I still try to use all the ingredients called for, but I tend to up all the add-ins because I want it to be obvious. You know, if it's a chocolate chip cookie, there's extra chocolate chips. If it's a s'mores cookie, I'll put little graham crackers, marshmallows, other chocolate on top. So it's obvious to the user what it is. It's nothing worse than picking up, you know, a cookie and is it just an oatmeal cookie? Is it chocolate chip? Is it a raisin? You look on the bottom, there's only three raisins. You want, you know, each bite to have a little bit of everything. I use a small cookie scoop for pretty much all my cookies, regardless of the size called for in the recipe. So the cooking time might be a little shorter, but it makes more cookies for, that allows more cookies for the soldiers to share. I post photos of everything I bake on social, linking to the recipes, and try to include any major changes I make on my Facebook page. I do vacuum seal everything, which keeps things fresher 4 to 5 times longer than normal. I just use it in an inexpensive vacuum sealer that I bought off Amazon and buy generic rolls of vacuum bags that I cut to length that I need. I've been asked this so many times that I've posted videos on my Facebook page of how I vacuum seal everything and become a cookie Tetris master of how to place things in my boxes. So there's a video of how I pack the boxes as well. I have followers from all around the world who reach out, not only with Soldier's Angels questions, but how to send things to their own loved ones. As to how I choose what to bake, that's a tough question because everyone's tastes are different. Some people like crunchy cookies while others like soft, chewy cookies. Some like chocolate chips, some don't. That's why I send a variety in each box. I do stay away from delicate cookies and sandwich style cookies, things that don't vacuum seal well. I can decorate cookies, but I don't like sugar cookies anyway. And it takes so long to decorate each cookie that I'd much rather bake a large bag of drop style cookies. I do occasionally make decorated cookies for special occasions like Christmas, but that's not my go-to type of cookie. All the soldiers share with everyone in their unit, so there's never a concern that they won't get eaten. From anyone I do hear back from, I give them the option to send me their wish lists of what are their favorite flavors so that I can send them a customized box. I get a lot of requests with anything with chocolate and peanut butter. Occasionally I'll get a request to support someone who's gluten-free. My favorite requests were from a soldier who said would send me a list of random ingredients, almost like Food Network mystery basket baking challenge without the time limits. And I would create custom recipes for him and his team throughout his deployment. So while other people tend to specialize in one type of baked good and always have their go-to recipe, I have a much broader impact and try new recipes each time. And not everyone likes the same thing. So trying new recipes gives me the opportunity to try new techniques and combinations, but it also gives the soldiers the opportunity to taste new things that they haven't tried before. I've received the President's Volunteer Service Award 5 times, which honors the most outstanding volunteers in the country and recognizes the impacts they make. My typical box has a layer of brownies, usually 15, and then 8 dozen cookies on top of that, for a dozen of each flavor, roughly. Over the last almost 6 years, I've tried over 1,000 recipes, sent over 400 boxes, which includes almost 40,000 cookies. I'll get there by the end of my 6 year mark. And this weekend, I'll be sending out my 6,000th box. It's actually waiting to be picked up right now. Part of the Soldier's Angels motto is that no soldier go unloved, and receiving a box of or letter during mail call is a tremendous boost in morale. And sometimes it may be the only care package they receive when deployed, if they don't have a strong support system at home. But who can't help but smile when eating a cookie?
Christina, some people, we have some comments coming in. Can I ask you a few questions? Is that okay?
Yep.
We've had people want to know if you get feedback from the soldiers who eat your treats, and do you send more than one box to the same soldier?
Usually you pick a new person each time, but if I do hear back from them, I give them the option of getting a supplemental box with whatever cookies they want. Last year, s'more cookies seemed to be the favorite. And there was one unit that I happened to pick 4 people in their same unit, and then 4 of their friends also said, ooh, how can I get a box? So I sent like 8 boxes just to that one unit. And the soldier that would send me all the ingredients, I think I sent him like 6 or 7 boxes while he was deployed. Some people think I should sell my baked goods, but I think that misses the point of what I do. A kind gesture can make all the difference to someone that needs it. I don't hear back from everyone, but I wanted to share the first card I received back, which is similar in sentiment from many of the others I received. So, thank you so much. Your package was not only filled with amazing baked goods, it was also filled with a sense of heartfelt that connected with every sailor. First, your cookies and brownies are amazing. As I offered my entire department, 30 plus sailors, everyone who ate it literally closed their eyes, and for a moment it took them back to a favorite memory. It is that moment that you have brought smiles and boosted morale, engaged in an entire department with shared stories of family and cookies. I can't express my gratitude for how much you have made a positive impact on our deployment. So that was just one of the comments I received. I packaged some cookies this morning. So my typical package of cookies looks like this. I stack sort of 8 together. And doing it this way, you can fit more in a box, but you can't really move it. The vacuum sealing sort of seals everything together. So it's, even if it's bouncing around in the box, it's not going to be a pile of cookie crumbs by the time it gets there. I do have some videos on my Facebook page of how I vacuum seal, pack my boxes. If anyone wants a video of any other of my tips, I can do those as well.
Thank you. And we have one more question. David would like to know, with so much baking that you do you buy all of your supplies in bulk?
Yes, I do tend to buy all my supplies in bulk. So the vacuum seal bags, I used to buy them in rolls, either 8 inches or I think this is 11 inches, and then cut them to length. Because I was going through so many of these, I started getting these, which are 150 feet long, and I have marks on the box of, you know, this is my cookie size length, and if I sort of pull it over, this is my, the length I need for brownies and things. So it's a little easier for that. In between the cookies, so that when I vacuum seal them, it doesn't become one giant cookie. I cut up parchment paper into 2-inch little squares. At first it was just regular parchment paper, but now I buy 4-inch squares and just cut them in half. Oddly, a few places will sell 2-inch squares, but they're pretty much the same price as the 4-inch squares. So I might as well just cut the 4-inch ones in half and have 4 times. I buy a lot of my flour and baking goods at like Costco, or for some reason Targets have cheaper prices on like specialized, like the mini chocolate chips or the peanut butter chocolate chips rather than the supermarket. So sometimes I'll do Target runs instead of buying them at the supermarket. My cupboards are pretty much, if you open them up, it looks like the baking aisle in the supermarket. Any other questions?
I think that's all. We've had a lot of comments about it's very inspiring and inspirational. So I wanted to make sure we shared those with you. And several people have said they're going to look into Soldier's Angels. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Christina. Your Instagram has been super helpful as Rachel and I are selling packages this year. So we appreciate it. Okay, so our next guest is JC Gregg. JC, are you here?
Am here.
Hi. Okay, well, thank you, JC, for coming. So JC is a self-taught home baker specializing in French pastries. I had a great time looking through your Instagram. Everything looks so beautiful, especially the macarons. So I'm excited to ask some questions about that. And he was also a former contestant on the Hallmark Christmas Cookie Matchup, as well as the Great American Baking Show. So thank you for coming. And before we get started talking about spring flavors, I just wanted to give you a chance to add anything else about yourself that would be good for us to know.
Well, no, thanks. Thank you so much for having me. This is just so fun. I love when people get excited and want to learn new things and kind of step out of their comfort zone. And your format, this procrastibaking, is so much fun. I've listened to so many of your past podcasts, and good Lord, we could do our own podcast with me asking tons of questions on the stuff that you guys have baked. That is just incredible.
Well, thank you.
But yeah, no. Just, I love to bake and I love to share with others. And I think the one driving force for me was a quote that I heard when I was about 13 from Winston Churchill. And he said, we make a living by what we earn, but we make a life by what we give. So much like Christina, almost everything that I do now is exclusively donated. Because that's where the passion comes from. So I'm up to any questions that you all may have.
That's lovely. What a nice quote. I guess just to start off, we're in spring, and what, in a more general sense, are some fun spring flavor combinations that we could consider adding to some of our classic bakes?
Well, I kind of stretched that a little bit. I like a lot of flavor. There is no disguising it. I am just about flavor, flavor, flavor. And today I just finished a cake. I woke up at 5 o'clock and she said, I want something spring colored and fun. I did a black currant gelée and black currant buttercream in between a passion fruit and a guava cake layer.
Oh, wow. Passion fruit and guava.
I know. And there's a thing at Disney, it's called Go-Go Juice or something like that. And that was the inspiration, where it uses orange juice. And I just happened to use black currant, which came up pretty fun. I'm all about anything in season and anything fresh, and almost everything I do is all natural. I have access to probably 200 different flavored fruit purees, all natural purees. So I don't relegate myself to any one season anymore, because I have that available to me all the time.
That is amazing. Where do you get the purees from?
There's a local company here called Mid-America Gourmet in the Kansas City area. They sell a lot of the Borden products, the frozen fruit purees. And I can just call the owner and say, hey, Patrick, I need a fig, I need a black currant, I need red currant, I need bergamot, I need yuzu. Can you deliver them tomorrow?
That's amazing.
We're going to move to your neighborhood.
Yeah, it's time to go to Kansas, Rachel. Can you talk a little bit about, because this is something we've talked about on the podcast too, Rachel is very adventurous with flavor pairings, and I tend to be a bit hesitant venturing out of my comfort zone. So what is the thought process behind deciding what flavors will go well with each other? Like, how do you decide what to pair?
I think a lot of people have a misconception that this won't go with this or something. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a macaron now, as an example. I was asked to do a charity brunch for Mother's Day and to create a macaron. And I thought, okay, so what are classic things that people eat at brunch? You have either waffles, French toast, mimosas, you have bacon, coffee. So I took my cue from that. And I made a German buttercream. And in that German buttercream, I did a nutmeg base. And since it's a German buttercream, it's a custard-based buttercream. So that simulates the egg. And then I put nutmeg in it to kind of reference or give a nod to French toast. And then I took bacon and I candied it. And then I made I took pure maple syrup and I made a creamed syrup, kind of like creamed honey. So it has creamed syrup, bacon, nutmeg, and I did a coffee shell. So it's kind of like eating brunch in a bite, where you have the waffle, you have the bacon, you have the egg, and then you have a cup of coffee with it. And it's turned out really good. It took me about 4 iterations to get it where I like it. But most of my most popular flavors are flavors that I created specifically for my palate. And oddly enough, they work, like my fig and blue cheese macaron with a citrus habanero center. It just works. And what I'll do in the comments over here, I'll link a couple of things. It's called a flavor star. And the flavor star takes and shows you sweet goes with some savories, savory can go with bitter, but bitter can't go with. And what I'll do is I'll put some links in the side over here. And then I was on Reddit and I found this graph that had over 7,000 different flavor combinations. And it tells you that peanut butter, oddly enough, go figure, goes with sriracha.
You hear that, Rachel? You got
peanut butter. I can believe that. That sounds good to me.
It does. And but I'll link all of this stuff over here in just a minute once I get all this stuff figured out. It's just really, I just have fun with it, and I'm adventurous. I'm super adventurous. Another quick note, I don't want to take up too much time. I was walking by somebody and they had one of those vape pens, and I smelled it and I'm like, what is that scent? He said, it's kiwi, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what? So I went to a vape store, looked at, there was probably 500 different scents in that store. So I asked the owner, I said, where do you get this? So he then said, well, here's the company we get it from. So I contacted that company and he's like, well, we add the nicotine and all of the bad additives. Here's who we get our food grade essence from. And it's a company, and you guys want to write this down because it's wonderful, wonderful. It's called Delosi Labs, D-E-L-O-S-I, Labs. So I contacted the owner of Delosi Lab, and I'm like, I smelled this, and I understand, is this food grade oil? He said, yes, it's all food grade. It's all, and almost all of it's organic. He goes, I can send you a sample pack if you'd like. So he sent me about 70 different flavors, one of which was the most unique. It was Cuban cigar. I thought, like, what is that? So I thought, something, I can do something with this. So for Father's Day, I took the Cuban cigar oil and put it in a chocolate bourbon ganache and steeped it with some Lapsang Saejeong tea to give it the smokiness. And that was the center of my macaron. It's just stepping outside of that box. I've had plenty of fails. I've made, I think this year I will hit 500,000 macarons. I have had probably 100,000 fails. But knowing that you can do so many things, it doesn't have to be sweet either. And I did a big event for somebody. I had to do 1,200 macarons, savory macarons. And I used squid ink powder in the shell. I did everything bagel seasoning on some of the shells, where I would do a salmon mousse in some. I did a shrimp pate in another one. It was a seafood event. And people tend to relegate themselves to pastry cream being sweet. Well, I make pastry cream. Any of you that have ever made pastry cream, you can make pastry cream, just omit the sugar, and then it's not sweet. And then you can add savory items to that. And that's exactly what I made the pastry cream. Left the sugar out and added salmon mousse to it. And it was not sweet at all. The only sweetness you had was from the shell, which you can counteract with seasonings, different flavorants. But yeah, I just love to have fun with flavor. It's so out of the ordinary from what, you know, the typical strawberry chocolate, which are fine. But that's, I'm a little bit over the top in color and creativity. And I kind of say my style is like if Willy Wonka, Dr. Seuss, and Tim Burton had a child, that's kind of where you would find me.
I love that description. And I love that story you told about following the, starting an investigation when you smelled the vape pen that led you to creating something so unique baking wise. That's amazing. We have a couple of questions. So one of our questions was, what would you pair with chocolate to make it more spring-like?
Passion fruit. And I wouldn't do a dark chocolate. I would do a 55 to 60% chocolate. When you get into the higher chocolate ratios, you're looking at more fall and winter flavors, more heartiness, where you can add those stronger essence of mint and peppermint and bergamot's kind of a lighter flavor, but you can do dark with dark, but in the springtime I like to go out a little bit lighter.
Okay, and one more, what would you add to a lemon flavor to give it a bit of a twist?
Rosemary.
I'm always afraid to use rosemary because it's so
It is very strong.
Yeah.
I was listening to one of your podcasts where you did a cake. It was a Venezuelan muffin, a cinnamon roll. And it had clove in it. And you guys were talking about how clove is so strong. Clove used improperly equates to medicinal. It's almost like a mouthwash or something, an astringent. So you've got to be really careful when you use herbs. I use a very small amount, taste it, let it sit for 10 minutes, retaste it. And then if it's not strong enough, add a touch more. Don't just throw in 2 teaspoons of rosemary, or just go less is more. Sometimes I don't usually follow that rule, but when it comes to flavors, I do less is more.
That makes sense. Start with a teeny bit first. Okay. Wow. JC, thank you so much. This was really helpful. And we appreciate you sharing those resources too, related to flavor
pairing. Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. I can't wait to watch the rest of the fun and enjoy.
Thank you.
Before we go to our next guest, we do have 2 puns that have come in. Life is what you bake it, in response to JC's quote he gave us at the beginning. And also, don't bake my heart, send me to Bake Fest. So those are the 2. So keep them coming, guys. We love puns. If you listen to our show at all, you know we're super cheesy. And puns make us smile. So feel free to keep sending the puns. And don't forget to tag us in your spring baking photos. All right. So our next guest is Yvette Marquez Sharpnack. She's a home chef, award-winning food blogger, and cookbook author. On social media, she can be found under Muy Bueno Cooking, and recently released her new cookbook, Muy Bueno Fiestas, 100+ delicious Mexican recipes for celebrating the year. Welcome.
Thank you. I mean, I feel like I am not worthy to be in this room. You all are so amazing. And I really was ready to cry, Christina, when you're talking about like reading that letter. That was so beautiful. I mean, my brother, he's been in the military and he's been overseas. And, you know, I'm sure these amazing home baked goods, you know, really make these soldiers.
Yes, this is actually my wall of responses in that letter is this book.
I love that because, you know, me as a food blogger, that's what I love to hear. I love to hear from people and say how, you know, especially, you know, my recipes are Mexican. They're all Mexican inspired. My blog, it's called Muy Bueno. For anybody who knows what Muy Bueno means, it means very good in Spanish. And so my grandma, she would always welcome people into her house, like, siéntate a comer, está muy bueno, which means sit down and eat, it's very good. So when we were coming up with, you know, my business name, that Muy Bueno kept coming up. And and then, you know, learning about the flat cupcakes. That was my first hearing flat cupcakes. I never even had heard that before. So that was super cool. I'm excited about that because I don't love a lot of frosting. So I love that it's like minimal frosting and they look so cute and clever. So my desserts and my baking is very rustic. So, you know, when it comes to Mexican food, there's a lot of classic dishes that I grew up with that are in my new cookbook or in my blog. But one of the things that we make a lot are empanadas. And empanadas, you know, there's so many variations. But in Mexico, when you get an empanada, they're usually sweet filled. So one of my favorite ones growing up is pumpkin. So fall, you know, in the fall, like I'm craving pumpkin empanadas. And in my cookbook, I have sweet potatoes. So it's a camote empanadas. So, you know, it's so delicious and, you know, has all those flavors of fall. I also have like a Valentine's Day chapter in my blog, in my cookbook, and it's berry empanadas. So all these like roasted berries that are in there and then shaped like hearts. So I have a lot of fun, you know, traditional Mexican baked goods. And so when you're talking, Christine, about, you know, sending these cookies off and stuff, we have a lot of cookies in my cookbook. What was funny is not funny. It was pretty fabulous. So I just wrote my cookbook, Muy Bueno Fiestas. This week it launched Tuesday. And last night, if I look a little tired, it's because we were celebrating. So last night we had our official launch party. And I have a FedEx surprise probably. So we had our launch party. And so I have a few little cookies. So this is like bizcochos. They're a traditional Mexican wedding cookie. And so we, you know, when we have parties, like any Christmas, or they're popular for weddings or quinceañeras when a girl turns 15, or baby showers, there's always little packages of cookies on the table. And then these are polvorones. So I don't know if you could see them through the little thing, but they're just like sprinkle cookies, and they're just a basic shortbread cookie. So in my cookbook, I also have a lot of traditional baked breads. So if you've ever been to a panaderia, which is like a Mexican bakery, they have, I mean, it just, once you've been in a panaderia, you'll be like, oh yeah, I've been there. You know, it's, that's just the smell, really, just, you know, changing. Yeah, it's just the freshly baked dough, all the breads. So I have a lot of breads in my new cookbook as well. I have conchas, which are like so popular. It's like, looks like a little seashell topping. So I have conchas in my cookbook. I have pan de muerto, which is, translates to bread of the dead. So if you've ever seen anything for Dia de los Muertos, which is Day of the Dead, it's a very traditional baked bread that families leave at a gravestone when they're honoring somebody who's departed. So you normally buy it at a panaderia, but I have a homemade version of it. So if you want to, you know, make a little home altar at home to honor your departed loved ones, you can put that on there, or, you know, bake their favorite dishes. That's just a big celebration that we do as my family, because my grandma lived to be 98 years old. And so I continue to honor her, with all the recipes and all the celebrations. And so Dia de los Muertos is big for my family, because it's a time for, you know, my children who didn't necessarily grow up with her, but for me to share those stories of who she was and all the special foods that she made and how she would welcome everybody in her home and share these traditions so that we can continue those traditions. So I also have churros in my cookbook. And I know somebody asked about like what's pairs well with lemon. And we did a lavender lemon buttercream on the churros. So you can, you know, top your churros, and they're like baked churros, which is different because a lot of churros are deep fried. So I really wanted to do a baked version. And so we made them little circular churros, and then you can just top them and sandwich them, or just, you know, they're really pretty at a party with like some fresh lavender around. And then I love, you know, traditional Mexican toppings like dulce de leche, which is like just like a Mexican version of a caramel. And so I have dulce de leche brownies. So yeah, I mean, my baking style is very rustic. It's not fancy, not very decorative, but just, you know, things that I grew up with and things that I love. So this is my new cookbook, Muy Bueno Fiestas. And so it has over 100 recipes, and the photography is gorgeous. I'm so proud of it. We shot, you know, all of it in my home. So you could see this is like, it's all separated into holidays. So this is the Valentine's Day chapter. You could see the little berry empanadas, the dulce de leche brownies. And I have some little cajeta thumbprint cookies. And then this is like probably as fancy as I get. It's like a Mexican chocolate stout cake with a whiskey ganache. So that one is in my St. Patrick's chapter. So it's a little, it's a little bit Mexican and a wee bit Irish. So yeah, that's my type of baking, and that's what I do.
Congratulations, Yvette. The book looks beautiful. And
Thank you. I wanted
to ask a couple of questions. We're so intrigued by the cookbook process. So what is do you have a favorite behind the scenes moment of developing this cookbook that you could share with us?
Yeah, so my journey, I mean, I've been blogging since 2010. This is my third cookbook. My first cookbook is Muy Bueno. My second cookbook is Latin Twist, which is all cocktails from Latin America and Spain. And then now Muy Bueno Fiestas. So with Muy Bueno Fiestas, I've always wanted, since the first cookbook, I knew that I wanted to write a cookbook revolved around the holidays, because that's how I entertain. You know, it's like, okay, Easter's coming, you know, what are we making? What's on the menu? And, you know, it's all those special cravings that you get for every holiday that you have to have. I have to have my mom's macaroni salad. I have to have, you know, like there's just certain dishes that I have to have. And so what's special about this cookbook is that there's crafts also sprinkled into the cookbook. So there's traditional things like Easter just passed. And what we do is we make cascarones, which are confetti filled Easter eggs. And so, you know, what you do is they're hollowed eggs and they're filled with confetti. And, you know, you hide them just like you would an Easter egg hunt, but then you crush them on everybody's head. And so it's just like a fun, you know, thing. It's like, what was funny is like, I grew up with cascarones and those are Easter tradition. And I remember the first time I saw somebody dyeing hard boiled eggs. I was like, isn't that going to hurt? Like when you hit somebody in the head. I just thought like every family broke cascarones on each other's head for Easter. When I started this idea for the cookbook, it was 2019 and I started writing my proposal, and then the pandemic happened and it was so hard to pitch the idea of an entertaining style cookbook. You know, my book is like, let's gather, let's have parties, let's, you know, have celebrations. Well, we all know that didn't happen for a couple of years. So, I was so happy when a publisher was like, you know, it's going to happen. And finally they decided to publish my cookbook. But it's writing a cookbook. It's a huge process, a big, you know, like I said, started 2019 and it literally just published came out on Tuesday. So it's a long process, a lot of hard work, a lot of developing recipes, testing recipes, double testing recipes, testing them again, writing, editing, shooting, you know, all the photography, buying all the props. Like if you could see my background, that's like some of my props because I'm a prop whore.
Wow. Yeah. Just hearing details about how labor intensive it is. Mm-hmm. Incredible.
And I'm amazed when I see authors who photograph their own cookbooks. I have a photographer and she's incredible and she comes to my home and we shoot everything here. But yeah, that in itself is a whole other thing, you know, for the folks who, you know, when I first started, I would shoot my own photos, but I mean, to write a cookbook and do it all and do the photography, it's amazing when, you know, to do the whole process.
Yeah, it's a lot. And you know, Yvette, someone noted in the comments that they have been wanting to try to make concha. So do you have any tips or tricks for Donna?
To use an instant yeast, it works a lot better. It's a lot fluffier and it's a lot easier to, I'm so intimidated by yeast. Like it's just, it's that, you know, it just makes me nervous. But so with this one, it's very easy. Let me see if I could find the photo of it really quick. But and what you can also do the topping, when you carve your topping, you can use, you know, just a regular paring knife. But they also sell little concha shell molds, not a mold, but it's like a cutter that's on Amazon. And it's kind of like a little flick of the wrist. So here's a little topping you could see.
That's beautiful.
And that's my son right there, Blake. So these are horchata and Mexican chocolate conchas. So the topping have like the flavors of Mexican chocolate, and then the other ones have horchata flavor, so which is like a Mexican rice milk.
So yummy. I love horchata. We have one more question. Wondering if you had to pick one recipe from the book to make this month, what would you pick?
This month. And we're talking baking or anything?
Yeah, really, both, anything.
I would say the bizcochos, which are our Mexican wedding cookies, because they're just light and little and fun. And, you know, with springtime, I feel like all the baby showers are happening and it's just an easy, we use, my mom uses like a cookie press. And so, you know, there's nothing to it where it's like, you don't have to do anything fancy, you know? And so, they're easy to make hundreds at one time. And they're just perfect when you're having a little party and little, you know, tea. So yeah, right now I'm craving, you know, because in my bizcochos, a traditional bizcocho from El Paso or from New Mexico, they have anise. And so I know JC was talking a lot about like the strong flavors. There's some people who are anti-anise. And so with these, I added orange. So it's like a combination of fresh orange juice, orange zest, and an orange liqueur. So they're super yummy and very fresh and springy and just with all the citrus notes. And so they're super tasty.
That sounds lovely. Yes. Mm-hmm. And hearing you mention anise in our most recent podcast episode that we've recorded but haven't aired, Rachel and I talked about anise because I used it in a cherry pie and it was a bit strong for my liking. So yeah, it's interesting to hear how, so your cookies don't have anise or they have the orange that kind of tones it down.
My family traditional ones have anise and that's in the first cookbook.
Gotcha.
So the good old fashioned anise style is in my first cookbook. In this new cookbook, it's these orange flavored bizcochos. So no anise for the people who are anti anise.
I'm getting there. I'm open to it, but I know. Okay, Yvette, thank you so much. This was lovely.
Thank you.
All the
cookbooks. And thank you, JC. You said you just ordered my recent cookbook. So I appreciate that. I, you know, this is the first week. And so that, you know, those book orders matter. So I really appreciate any and all support. If you love Mexican food, there's not only a lot of baked goods, but a lot of savory dishes, a lot of traditional, you know, enchiladas, tacos, mole. I mean, just all of it.
May I add something to the anise factor? What I have found for me, I love anise. I absolutely love it. What I have done to lessen the severity of it is I melt the butter that's going into the cookie recipe, put two or three star anise in it and let it steep so you don't have that strong flavor. It's more of a back note. And that's how I will lessen a flavor because too many people think it tastes like licorice, which I absolutely love.
Yeah.
So that's just a subtle way and make with orange, mix it with some orange rind and put that in your butter and make a compound butter and use that in the recipes. Might give people a little bit of a different flavor and not so distance themselves from anise because it is a wonderful, wonderful flavor.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I appreciate the tips. Yeah, I've been taking notes this whole time. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We have another pun. I always macaron in my heart for you. Sorry, I couldn't read my own handwriting.
I always macaron in my
own heart for you. I always make room macaron.
I see.
That one's from, I think it was from Juliet. Then with Donna and I forget who did the other one. I think it was a page.
That's so cute. Right. I love that our listeners are also as cheesy as us, Rachel. Warm heart.
So we have another demo coming up for you guys. I'm very excited to introduce to you Leanne of Colorado Cocoa Pod because I've had the honor of taking a class from her at last year's Bake Fest. And y'all, my chocolate bars turned out amazingly well. So you're going to definitely want to watch this demo. Welcome, Leanne. Feel free to take it away.
Hey, hello. Hopefully you can all hear me. I'm just going to adjust my screen a little bit. I'm Leanne, Colorado Cocoa Pod. I'm in Colorado. I usually do a lot of bonbon making, but today, since it's pretty short, I'm just going to do a few bar inclusions and kind of show a little bit of spring painting, pretty much just kind of keeping it simple too. So I did a few ahead of time. These ones I did with white chocolate and made them really simple with some dried fruits and then some freeze-dried fruits too. So this is one of them. It's a raspberry mango. So this one, I laid down some of the raspberry powder first, just to give it that pink design on top, and then did the white chocolate. And then on the back, I put in a few dried mango pieces and raspberry, and then covered some and then added more. So that was a really fun flavor, and I'm really excited to actually eat that one later today. I also did a raspberry peach mango one. This one, you can kind of see some of the mango pieces through the bar. So this is like another technique way to decorate by putting like the fruit pieces down first and then putting in the chocolate and adding more on the back. And then this last one I put the chocolate first and then I put in some blueberries, which kind of, I guess, showed through, giving a little bit more color, and then some freeze-dried strawberries. So today, like, I've got my dark chocolate tempering machine running, so I don't have to temper chocolate for you, but I started designing a few bars. So I've got some mini bars here. I use polycarbonate molds from Chocolate World. These I already had washed them, polished them with some isopropyl and a cotton ball. And I started painting a few of them here. Not sure if it's easier to see this way or this way. So since it's spring, decided to do some spring colors, obviously. So let me grab a few of my colored cocoa butters really fast. So I keep colored cocoa butter in a melter so that I have them warm and / almost tempered, ready to use. So these ones, I have them, they're melted to about 89 degrees-ish. Make sure I like mix them really well before I start painting. A lot of things I use to paint with are like sponges, brand new toothbrushes too. These are fun because they give you like a little, you can flick them with your finger and it gives you like this splatter design. I have a bunch of like smaller tipped brushes that I've used to like paint just lines here, really simple. And I use round foam brushes a lot, which really easy, really fun to use, gives it a very simple design, but also it's easy to just layer them. I am going to grab some chocolate. Since I already decorated these, they're already gonna fill them right now. I have another bar mold that I use too. This is a bigger one, obviously. So these ones I'm probably, like for my bars personally that I sell, I don't get too fancy. I don't like paint them or anything. I like to show just the chocolate design on it. So some of them I'll take chocolate that's almost tempered, add things like fruity pebbles, or I'll do like a cookies and cream one with Oreos. And it's fun because with this design, you can kind of see like the geometric shapes and people just love it. And it's shiny, it shows off like the natural color of chocolate, especially if it's tempered correctly. And then it's just like really simple and elegant. So let me fill up this bag with some chocolate and then I will pipe these ones and then put some chocolate in here. And then I've got a few different inclusions that I'm gonna add. I've got like some freeze-dried fruits. These are little crispy chocolate-covered pearls from Valrhona. So I've got dark chocolate, some caramel, and some white. Another thing I also like to use are caramel flakes. So these are really fun. You can mix them within the chocolate or just like sprinkle them on the back, especially with dark chocolate. Like I like using caramel and maybe a little bit of sea salt, and then it's not like super sweet, but it's not too bitter either. And it's just a fun little snack. Let me fill this one up. So I'm going to fill these smaller bars up first. And then for the bigger ones, usually I put them on a scale and weigh them out just so that I know that all of the bars are the same weight. But these smaller ones is a little bit easier to eyeball. So I kind of just tap them down. They're just to get out like the air bubbles and things. It's a little hard to see like the design. So these ones, you could just have them plain, or because they're like smaller snacking bars, I'm probably going to add some of these like little crispies to them. So let me see if I can bring my thing here so you can see it. So I've got like these white chocolate ones. Super easy, just put a few in the bag. I've got caramel too. With the caramel ones, I like adding a little bit of sea salt as well. And then these are just dark chocolate ones. So for the people who just really enjoy dark chocolate, these bars are for them. Let me grab a little bit of sea salt here. On the back of those ones. And so for these bars, usually I'll just pop them in the refrigerator for like 5 or 5-10 minutes or so, just so that they set up really fast and easy, and then they're super nice to pop out. So I'm gonna just stick those in really fast. They might be done before the demo, they may not be, but so for these bars, again, like I said, because of the design on them, I like keeping them kind of just the natural chocolate. I don't necessarily like painting them as much, but you're more than welcome to. It adds color. Or you can also, once you like mold them and unmold them, use colored cocoa butter and just kind of like flick some color on top. It gives it kind of like that 3D look. So I like doing splatter sometimes that way. You can kind of like just, it adds a little bit more color to it. So for this one, I'm going to weigh it. Let me all adjust my screen again so you can see. So these ones are about 80 gram bars. And it's a lot easier with a piping bag too, because then you can kind of control exactly how much chocolate gets put in there. So for this one, I'm going to do some freeze-dried raspberries. So I get these from nuts.com. They're really in bulk. They're really good. I like doing a lot of fruit flavors for spring too, and for summer as well. And plus they add a like, nice little touch of color too. Let's see, maybe do some blueberries. You could just have fun with it too. Really whatever design, whatever fruit you like. I really like using freeze-dried fruit and dry fruit because you can always get them year round. And so another way to do the other bars is you can lay down fruit first and then pipe chocolate on top. So this one I'm going to do blueberry mango. Some freeze-dried mangoes. You can also use dried mangoes. It doesn't have to be freeze-dried. And then for these ones, I like to make sure that I pour some chocolate on top, like of every piece. That way, I for sure know that it's like covered in the back and also stuck down to the bar. And then if you drizzle chocolate on top, it'll like show the little pockets through, which is also really fun. Cool. So this one, you can kind of see like the pieces are partially covered. If I wanted to, I can crunch up more mango and just kind of add it to the back. A couple more blueberries. And then you've got your bars. And so again, these I'll probably just pop into the refrigerator for like 10, 15 minutes till they set up, and then just unmold them, package them, or just start eating them. So yeah. Any questions on bars?
Those are so beautiful, Leanne. I know you mentioned you could use either freeze-dried fruit or fresh fruit. Do you have a preference? Like, do you notice a difference?
So I like freeze-dried just a little bit more. That's just a personal preference. I like the flavor because it's like for mangoes, I don't know, the freeze-dried texture, I feel like that's kind of what's in these days. Everyone's freeze-drying candy and, you know, things like that. And so it kind of gives it that like extra little crunch versus some dried fruits, you know, it's like softer. But it's really whatever you like. And whatever you can find too, right? Sometimes freeze-dried is a little bit more expensive and you don't get as much. So dried fruit is perfectly fine. And yeah, they both have like really good flavors. And so it just kind of depends on your texture and what you prefer.
Okay, cool. And then I haven't used chocolate in this way. So if I wanted to make bars like this, what are maybe like my essentials that I would need to get started? I know you mentioned the molds, which seem really important.
Yeah, so I personally like the polycarbonate molds. I don't really use silicone molds because with the polycarbonate ones, they're hard, obviously. Then you can like tap them out a lot better for bubbles and stuff. And also when they're polished, your chocolate does need to be, make sure it's in temper, then they do give like that really shiny look and finish from the mold. Chocolate, really good chocolate. I mean, you can start off probably with chocolate chips if you wanted to. I use Valrhona. I get it from my distributor, but I think you can also like order it online, find some in stores. But if you, really good chocolate if you're able to get it. And then really for inclusions, it's whatever you like. It could be as simple as sea salt. You can crush up Oreos, mix those in. For painting, I use, again, colored cocoa butter. The brands I use are, and I'm not sponsored or anything, brands I use are usually like Chef Rubber, which they've got online. So Chef Rubber, or I also use Choco Transfer Sheets cocoa butter. A little bit goes a long way. They do have like the instructions on there too. So if you don't know what tempering chocolate is, I would look it up. But the idea is pretty much melting the chocolate to a certain point so that all the crystals in it are melted, and then cooling it down so that when the crystals reform your chocolate, that it's what gives it that snap. It's helps give it that shiny look so that you don't get any streaks in it. It's a lot of process and detail, but definitely look up chocolate tempering if you're looking into making chocolate bars. But you can also just do plain chocolate, and then if it doesn't come out right, if it's not tempered, remelt it and start again. So that's the beauty of it. Yeah.
Cool. And Yvette just mentioned in the chat that she's in Colorado too, which I think is fun. You guys are close together. I'm not sure what cities.
Yeah, I'm in Denver near like the airport and stuff. So I do mainly a lot of pop-ups around Colorado, the Denver metro and Centennial area.
Cool. Yeah.
I'm south in the suburbs in Highlands Ranch, but
I do some events here there too. Definitely go down there a lot. So
that's sure. Lovely. Well, thank you so much, Leanne. And with that, our event is coming to an end. I really enjoyed it. We're so appreciative that you all took the time to come and share your specialties and your baking knowledge with us. And just a reminder that this will be on replay. So if anybody wants to share with friends, that'll be possible. And if any of our guests are interested in coming on our podcast to do an interview or just share something, we are always open.